And after solving the state space equation, we made this approximation that let's assume our independent inputs are slowly varying. And then we get this nice closed form equation for how our states propagate in time. We then looked at, okay, how can I apply this to switching systems? And based on the assumption that my switching system is fundamentally, in case of a bug, two different nice LTI systems. The circuit, equivalent circuit in subinterval one, the equivalent circuit in subinterval two. Now I have a closed form equation to describe how all of the states progress during those subintervals. I can just apply them kind of recursively for subinterval one, then for subinterval two, to get an equation that describes how my states at the end of a period depend on my states at the beginning of a period. X of Ts depends on X naught.
Okay.
Then we first looked at what this tells us in steady state. For a two-state system, or a two-subinterval system, we've solved it. This equation here would really be general to any converter which has two switching subintervals, whether it's a buck or a boost. The things that would change are what's in these A and B matrices that describe the circuits in those subintervals. And times could change depending on converter and operating point, but that equation will remain constant. If we have a converter with an arbitrary number n of switching subintervals, then we can extend this equation looking at kind of the patterns here as I apply it for both subintervals to get something that looks like this. And this now can be solved in closed form for the steady state operation, assuming states at the end of period are equal to states at the beginning of the period, which is our definition of steady state. And now I get a single line equation which solves the steady state of any converter. Nice thing about this is I haven't applied any approximations. This is exact states. This doesn't use small ripple, doesn't average anything. This is truly the behavior of the circuit that we're modeling. Now, if I have other nonlinearities, if I have, I want to account for the behavior during the switching time, those would be in here. This is an exact model of something that's an ideal circuit that jumps between two LTI or more equivalent circuits. And note down here, you need to know the times that you're in each of these different switching subintervals. If you don't know those, for example, because you're in DCM and the diode ramps down and you don't know what that time is until you've solved it out, this will not inherently model that unless you go in and figure out what that time is. What will happen, we assume the diode's on, we assume it's a short, so when I have that equivalent model for that switching subinterval, there's no knowledge left in there that this current has to be positive, and mathematically this thing will let diode current go negative if you tell it the equivalent model in this has a short here. So then from there, we started looking at transitioning this thing over into discrete time and developing our small signal model. This thing is kind of inherently well suited to being more of a discrete time model now, right? So derived equations at specific times, you know, states at the beginning of the interval that can give us states at the end of a period, end of each switching subinterval. So it's looking more like a discrete time model. We've got closed form solutions at these specific time instances within each period. Now I can always take the states at the beginning of a subinterval and hop back to this equation to get the full waveforms back. But that's an extra step. Model inherently looks more like this discrete time thing. Okay. So we came here and we said, in discrete time per period, my states in the next period are related to my states in this period by this product of matrix exponentials. This is superposition component only. So X hat is my only small signal perturbation. I just have X hat, my small signal component, that's going to propagate through each of these states and give me X hat at the end of the period. And where we ended last time, okay, now I know how my small signal really natural response looks, but I still don't have anything describing the response to changes in my control. But picture of my duty cycle and my buck converter, how's that going to affect the states? And that's what we'll do next. So I'm going to first kind of rederive this natural response that we looked at on the previous slide. I'm going to, the next few slides, use this graphical model to kind of illustrate the concept. So this is, I start from time n minus 1 TS and go to NTS, going over one period. My, so it shouldn't be DTS, it should be n minus 1 plus D times TS, the point at which I switch. So then switching subinterval 1 here and 2 here. And what I'm plotting is X of T, which is a bit of a misnomer because X should be this matrix of multiple states, and I'm plotting it as a single line. So this is just graphically to help you think about what's going on. If I actually plotted X of T, it'd be multiple lines with different wave shapes. It'd be the plot of the inductor current and the capacitor voltage. I'm just plotting one arbitrary line showing that, okay, conceptually, my states start somewhere, they kind of change in some direction during the first subinterval and a different direction during the second subinterval, and end up in steady state at the same point they started at. Okay. So I start here, I end here, my X of n minus 1, my X of n, my states at the beginning and end of the subinterval are the same, so I'm in steady state. So now I'm going to look at perturbing two things, the states and my control. So if I look at perturbing the states first, I apply some perturbation at the beginning of the interval, X hat and minus 1. My states at the start are somewhat different, and then they propagate through in perhaps a slightly different way to lead me to my states at the end of the subinterval, which have some difference from my steady state solution. Okay. Why are these states perturbed? So you can think maybe I'm in the middle of a transient situation. I changed the duty cycle 5 periods ago. Now the duty cycle is steadied out and I'm in my new steady state, but the states haven't steadied out yet. But somehow I'm in a transient situation because of this. And maybe not super easy to see, but these two points are not the same. So things in the middle of transient. So I want to look at what is the value of X out of N, a small signal perturbation at the end of the period. Well, this is what we just did. I take my small signal state at the beginning of the period, X hat, and propagate them through the two switching subintervals, ignoring, since I'm in my small signal linear analysis, I can ignore the effects of any inputs, the effects of any other perturbations, and say my X hat of N is equal to e to the A2 T2, e to the A1 T1, is X hat of N minus 1 from propagating through subinterval 2, subinterval 1, T1 is equal to DTS, T2 is equal to D prime TS. Okay. And it's important that these are in the correct order, propagate through, right, 2 plus It's supposed to be a 1.
Sub-interval 1 first, I think. States beginning, probably get through sub-interval 1. This gives me my states
here. Call this x hat of n minus 1 plus d. That's this here. And then those become kind of my new initial condition for propagating through the second sub-interval. This, a bit of a cheat on notation. I'm doing a discrete time model with a non-integer index. I think that's the most intuitive way to label that. So sorry if that irks you. That has to be an integer. I know. Sorry. So what I get at the end, what we did previously, I'm going to model this as some state transition matrix B times states at the beginning of the interval. So x hat of n is equal to phi x hat of n minus 1. Matching these two equations, phi is equal to e to the a2 t2 e to the a1 t1. Questions on that?
Okay. This is what happens when I have only an initial perturbation in the values of my states.
Now I want to look at what happens when I perturb the duty cycle. I'm going to put that on top of my previous plot.
And now I've taken my duty cycle and I've perturbed it by increasing it slightly. And I go from the black line I had before up to this dashed red line.
So this is going to cause some additional change in the states.
I'm going to have my phi times x hat plus the sort of linear contribution of this perturbation and duty cycle.
So I'm going to end up now with my x hat of n here is the result from the previous slide, x hat of n minus 1 plus something resulting from this perturbation in the duty cycle.
And what I want to do on this slide is solve what this something is.
So looking at this,
what really happens when I increase the duty cycle? In my previous slide, right at this time, my circuit changed from the circuit during subinterval 1 to the circuit during subinterval 2, and I propagated to the end of subinterval 2. By changing duty cycle, I propagated subinterval 1 a little bit longer. And
the result of that slightly longer perturbation, slightly longer time in subinterval 1, is that I'm going to have this perturbation here
I call x hat of d. I'm going to use this just as an intermediate variable to solve what goes on at the end.
But basically, by staying in subinterval 1, I'm going to have some difference here between what happens when I stay in subinterval 1 and what happens if I went to subinterval 2.
At the end of that perturbation, whatever I have for the states then just propagates through subinterval 2 until the end. So
my gamma
is going to be equal to, well, if I could solve what this xd hat is,
(clears gamma.
What I get at the end of this is just going to be
really my total perturbation. It's not going to work out. Gamma times d hat of n minus 1. So this total perturbation here
is going to be whatever this is propagating through subinterval 2 for the entire duration of the period.
So it's going to be this. And then I'm going to apply an e to the a2 t2 x d hat.
The same way I said
in the previous slide, whatever my states are here get multiplied by
from the left e to the a2 t2 to get me from this time to the end.
Now I've got some additional perturbation
on what's going on there. That propagates through the end along with the states. Make sense? If I wanted to match this a little bit better, I'd say this is t2 minus d hat ts. My assumption is that d hat ts is very small. Some small signal perturbation that's much smaller than t1, much smaller than t2. That's somewhat of an arbitrary distinction. So now all I need to do is figure out what this xd hat is. Fortunately, it's not going to be as simple of an equation. Conceptually, I mentioned earlier, this is the difference between what happens when I propagate or d hat ts length of time in subinterval 1 and subinterval 2, the difference between those. Right.
So point being, if I didn't have this perturbation, I'd do this. Now that I do, I go up here. It's the difference between those two effects.
And I know how to solve both of those. It's just states propagating through one circuit or states propagating through another circuit.
So I have that equation. It's right here.
I'll say it's propagating through a given circuit.
So if I go and apply this, xd hat is going to be what happens when I propagate through subinterval 1, which is going to be in e to the a1.
Not t1 just for this time, d hat ts.
Times whatever the states were when I started here. I'm going to give these things a name. X of p is x of n minus 1 plus d ds. Rest of the equation, e to the a1 d hat ts minus I b1 g, well, u to be more general.
So this is
an expression for what happens when I propagate here. Excuse me, sketched the wrong one. Get some colors going. So this is what happens when I stay in subinterval 1. This, what happens when I switch to 2. That
is how the states would propagate over this little bit of time if I stay in subinterval 1, as happens when I perturb the duty cycle, and I subtract off
a term that models what happens if I didn't have this perturbation and duty cycle. It's just the same thing, but instead propagating through the circuit in subinterval 2. Questions? See a lot of confused looks. Questions or requests for re-explaining? Yeah.
Which one of the first expression models? So I tried to match my colors. So the first one is modeling that green part where I stayed in subinterval 1, which is actually what happens when I perturb. But I'm looking at a small signal model, so I'm trying to find the difference between that and the black line. So green line is what happens, but I'm subtracting off what happened in the black line to get the difference between the two, which is that XD hat.
So when you perturb, it looks like you actually increased, went up in D. What if you actually reduced D? What will happen?
So if you reduce D, D is going to be negative. That's going to propagate through everywhere and cause this equation to still be valid. Because what I want to know, really it doesn't matter my drawing, I increased it. What I want to know is the difference between what actually happened and what would have happened if I didn't perturb. Just trying to get the differential behavior as a result of this perturbation. Spencer, do you have something?
That equation solving for the point in time at the end.
So I'm still right here.
Right, okay.
And this now, I have to plug in here to propagate through the rest.
Okay.
So I'm still at DTS plus D hat TS. So I can take this and I can plug it in here and I'll be done. It's somewhat of a mess, and now my variable here, what I really want is something like this. I want to know some coefficient on d hat. Right? This is an actual control, and adding it up in this exponential, I'm not going to be able to do much with it. So
what I'm going to do is I'm going to approximate these exponentials using a first order linear expansion of them. So I'm going to take this and I'm going to approximate e to the at approximately I plus at.
Now this approximation, as I argued last lecture or maybe the lecture before, has some problems. Because this matrix exponential doesn't necessarily linearize nicely. If I have some single value scalar plot, some x of t, where x is just one variable, and I linearize that, that's always going to be valid as long as I'm not at a discontinuity. So if I look close enough at it in a small window, it's always going to look like a straight line. With a matrix where I've got multiple things in there together, that intuition no longer holds. It doesn't necessarily linearize nicely. For things like a general buck converter, this is going to be a great approximation. If really my states, the dynamics of them is changing much faster than the time I'm trying to propagate through, this is not a great approximation. So for example, during my ZVS resonant dead time, where my time might be a quarter of the resonant period, this approximation is going to not be as good. But we'll apply it here anyway to get to a model that has some utility. So if I do that from the previous
slide.
All of these e to the a to d hat ts are going to become I plus a to the d hat ts. So here and here, I'm going to get that. Let me just write it out.
So this x hat sub b is equal to my first term, this is going to become I plus A1 D hat TS times XP plus A1 inverse I plus A1 D hat TS minus I B1U minus same thing with subinterval 2. Is that all right?
I think so.
Okay, so what's going to happen? In here, I'm going to have these i's cancel.
I plus minus I. And then I've got, once those are gone, A1 inverse times A becomes the identity matrix.
So those are going to cancel. Same thing down here. I cancels with I. A cancels with A.
And here, in these two terms, when I subtract them, they're both multiplied by XP, so I can bring terms in XP together. So I'm going to have I minus I, A1 DTS minus A2 DTS. So those I's will cancel with each other.
What I end up with is XD hat is equal to A1 minus A2 XP times D hat TS plus D1 minus B2 U times D hat TS.
Miss anything? That work. Okay. Now this is in a more reasonable form.
I can go back, apply this equation to get my gamma. Sorry about that. So here,
gamma times d hat is equal to a2 e to the a2 t2 times the result we just derived.
So I'll take that gamma d hat of n minus 1 is equal to e to the a2 t2 a1 minus a2 xp plus B1 minus B2 U times D hat TS.
And I saved myself a little bit on the notation, but this D hat was the D hat during the period, which was
D hat of N minus 1.
Had a lot of D hats to write, and I don't want to keep those brackets everywhere. Hopefully it looks good. So, take this, dance with this, gamma is what remains. So,
So that now gives me my complete model of the system. U x hat of n equal to v x hat of n minus 1 plus gamma d hat of n minus 1, where phi is equal to e to the a to t2 e to the a1 t1, and gamma is equal to what I have here, e to the a2 t2 1 minus a2 xp plus b1 minus b2 u ds. Everybody following?
So these things are now all related only to the steady state. My DC operating point coefficients, and I now have a linear difference equation describing my small signal circuit operation. So X hat is a linear combination of perturbation in states and perturbation in duty cycle. This is now discrete time. Difference equation instead of a differential equation, because I'm not going to be able to take this over into Laplace to do S domain analysis. Instead, I'm going to have to use Z domain analysis.
And so to get this thing over to a transfer function, now this is a difference equation. So we're going to use Z transform. I can solve for my GVD of Z, my controlled output transfer function in the Z domain is going to be C times ZI minus V inverse gamma plus D. C and D we haven't really focused on, but C and D are the matrix C's from the equation Y is equal to CX plus DU. This is whatever output I want in my states. These are my inputs. So, for example, with the buck we were looking at, we had X is equal to voltage on the capacitor, current in the inductor.
And if the output I want is the output voltage,
that looks like VC, oops, backwards, VCIL times 1,0.
Multiply these two together, it'll take off my VC state, do nothing times IL. So this works.
Which implies my equation would be C is equal to 1,0, and I have no direct feed forward term.
So the C matrix is just as a function of my states, figuring out whatever output I want. I can make my output IL, and this would be 0, 1. I could make it anything else, as long as I can write it as a linear combination of states, which as long as I know the states, I know how the circuit, what all the current waveforms are.
Time modeling. It's a pretty powerful tool. I have sprinkled throughout here various times, a few references down at the bottom that I think are quality references explaining some of these effects. I can tell from the glazed over looks I've been receiving in the last couple lectures that it's a bit tough to follow the first time through, and I very much sympathize with that. It's a very powerful tool, but it's something you need to go through a few times to really grasp and understand this concept of states propagating according to this equation and these difference equations. But it can allow you to model any arbitrary circuit, any number of switching subintervals, as resonant as you like or as linear as you like, all using a common modeling framework. Keep things more or less simple. Homework 9 sticks with the buck converter, but what I did is intentionally reduced filter sizes down to the point where it's got a whole lot of ripple, enough to really affect the waveforms and make the small ripple approximation invalid. If you take traditional techniques of averaging and small ripple approximation, you get one result. You go on the discrete time, you actually see what the circuit will do. And if you're applying invalid approximations, you should see a more accurate result using this. Okay. One more comment and then a few examples. Sampling delay. So throughout this derivation, I kind of assumed that I was exactly synchronous with the period. That I started with the states right at the beginning of subinterval 1, and I wanted to know the states at the end of the period, and that was my discrete time subinterval. In reality, what I care more about is, when did I make the decision on what the duty cycle needs to be for the next period, and when do I actually change it? How much delay is there between when I sample the output, pull that into my compensator, and go through and change my command for the duty cycle? So if I'm looking at this as a digital circuit, which, though this discrete time approximation can model continuous circuits easily, it really shines when you have some sort of digital compensator where you're already in discrete time anyway, and now you've got a direct discrete time model of your power stage. So what that would look like is, I've got my circuit with this GVD, then I come out, my output voltage, my control input, sense the output voltage, run it through an A to D, send that into my microcontroller. Microcontroller has internally a modulator, which that modulator is now already inherently part of this model. So I need a name for it. This is my control loop. Okay. So what I really care about is, this controller is going to sample the output. It's going to take some time for the A to D to run, convert that into a digital value. And it's going to take some time for the controller to do whatever mathematical functions it's doing for compensation before it decides what the duty cycle should be and actually implements that. And that duty cycle is not going to show up until the next time I switch. Okay. So even if I update the duty cycle right here, it's not going to affect the circuit until this D hat shows up. Right. So this is, over this period, the exact same plot as previously. But now I'm assuming back here is when I decided what the duty cycle is going to be. So I would have liked it if this was back before this period switched, but I didn't decide what the new duty cycle should be until I already switched in this period. So now I have to wait until I get to this point before the duty cycle is actually going to change and influence converter operation. Okay. So that being the case, what I would like to do is model my system synchronously with this decision. So I'm going to look at one switching period, which is now going to be from here to here. And this will tell me when my new duty cycle is available, and then I'm going to propagate through operation through a little bit of subinterval 2, then all of subinterval 1, and then the other half of subinterval 2. Okay. Fundamentally, no difference in how I go about modeling this whole thing. Difference is just instead of being go through 1, then go through 2, got this break, and it's going to give me a longer effective delay between when I change a duty cycle and when it actually does something. I have more delay in my system. Okay. Without going through a full derivation, this is going to result in phi that looks like e to the a2 times t2 minus t sample, e to the a1 t1, where I propagate through the whole thing, e to the a2 t sample, where, oops, I called it t sense, excuse me. Where t sense is this time. My gamma then is going to be e to the a2 t2 minus t sense times same thing, which is to say this expression here in brackets. So little note here, the equation form changes. If the sampling point should be this thing here, moves to a different subinterval. So if I continue my states back to here and I instead sampled back in the previous subinterval 1, then I have to have propagation through subinterval 1 back on the front of all of this. So this is valid for any t sense within subinterval 2. The further back I go, I have to tack on more of these propagation terms. All of them are effectively just adding more delay between when I sense what my output is and when I actually try to respond to it. So if I look at this as an example, I didn't have in the notes, so I added at the last minute, the buck converter, 1 megahertz, 5 volts, 1.8. You get the values here. If I model this buck converter using traditional, basically averaging small signal modeling techniques, I get this blue line. If I model it using our discrete approach, I get this red line. Z is averaging pretty good at low frequency, which is what we knew. As I get up close to the switching period, this discrete is modeling the actual behavior of the circuit. It's very rapid phase roll-off, I get a change in gain. These are the reasons why we say, if you're using this model, don't try to put your bandwidth out here. Because even if this says it's okay, you've got unaccounted for phase roll-off that's going to destabilize your system. This is due to the sampling effect of the PWM modulator. Even if I don't worry about all of this additional sampling delay that I was talking about in the last slide, even if I say, okay, as soon as I'm ready, the duty cycle is ready, there's no delay through the controller, I still have, this is just delay due to PWM sampling. The idea that I can only change the duty cycle once per period. So I have an effective delay
at the switching period, even if my system's completely ideal. But on top of that, I have additional delays due to when did my sample come from, this A to D and conversion delay. And if I add that in, if I look at different values of TD and the baseline discrete model, as I increase, this TD is what I call T-sense. If I increase that, the phase roll-off is going to get worse and worse. Eventually, I have enough delay in the system, even way back where I would have compensated my analog, I've got issues. Being just way behind on my delay. Okay. Questions?
Mm-hmm. So, will this frame time model and this lecture will more focus on the DC-DC conversion? But when we talk about like in the system, AC system, falling, for example, we're more focused on the line frequency control, and if your switching frequency goes very high, which means you have maybe 1,000 intervals. When you do this type of modeling for ACS, if there is any complexity issue there, or if, I mean, if doable, we can use software to do multiple intervals to model that, but it looks more complicated than the traditional model.
Well, even for DC, it's more complicated, right? This average model is very nice, very intuitive. By now, you can all just do that by inspection. Discrete time requires some thought and some calculation, so it's always going to be more complicated. And like I was mentioning last time, these matrix equations, MATLAB solves those in milliseconds. So if you want to set it up and let it run over 1,000 intervals, MATLAB will be more than happy to do that for you, and it'll be done in 5 seconds. So it's not an issue of time of convergence. It is an issue of, so what do you care about there, right? Traditional small signal average modeling is also not applicable to an AC system, right? You can linearize it around the individual operating points and look at the net behaviors of that. This would still be more accurate and faster to do relative to that. But in the end, I mean, the advantage you're getting in accuracy is out here. And when you're trying to model 60 hertz back here, probably not worth the additional effort. Right? I want to know, for my current control loop, which is just, I'm trying to push the bandwidth up, what's going on out here, how do high-frequency PWM dynamics affect it? I can incorporate actual dead times and resonant transitions easily into this. This doesn't force me to average anything. So I can, in my buck converter, instead of 2 switching subintervals, I have 4 now, 2 dead times. Same equivalent circuit, different initial conditions. Just pop them in there and propagate through 4 subintervals. So that's going to have an effect largely out here. In most cases, I'll show an example next class where it has an effect even at low frequency. But yeah, absolutely. If you want to know those low frequency dynamics.
My understanding is that people for DC-DC converter are trying to push to higher frequency and they're trying to push to obtain some faster response, dynamic response, so that they use this technique to do more accurate modeling for high frequency. In cases, people more about the line frequencies, that they don't really care about that high frequency response. So that it's not very popular in cases in the US.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my understanding.
Certainly, it depends on what you're doing. If you're doing a high power converter as a single loop at 60 hertz, you don't need this class. If you're doing a CRM-based inverter or rectifier, wanting to model these high-frequency dynamics and how the resonant transitions are affecting your system in that fast current loop, this is going to be much more accurate and better prediction. It's going to tell you how it affects things. So,
still that voltage loop around it, it's going to be a half high gain at 60 and attenuate everything else. Okay, we'll have some examples on Monday and we'll wrap up the course. Happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy it. See you Monday.